On your commute, on your walk, on your couch. With the WSHU app, you can stream your favorite shows, check playlists, and catch up on podcasts anytime. Plus, you can send us feedback right in the app. Tell us what you love or what you'd like more of. Download the WSHU app free on the App Store or Google Play.
This is WSHU's After All Things, with daily news and culture from around Long Island Sound. Connecticut sees a dramatic decrease in overdoses, breaking down a bill in New York on food transparency. Several Connecticut schools have refused visits from Secretary of Ed Linda McMahon, plus the first in WSHU's new series, Digital Citizen. Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garone. Connecticut has seen a dramatic decrease in overdose deaths over the last 5 years. WSHU's Molly Ingram reports officials credit the availability of the overdose reversal drug naloxone.
In 2021, more than 1,500 Connecticut residents fatally overdosed. By 2025, that number had decreased by 45%. Evan Allard is the director of the state's Intelligence Center.
It's almost a direct correlation between the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, their deployment of naloxone, and an immediate decrease in fatal overdose deaths.
The department has distributed hundreds of thousands of overdose prevention kits since 2022. Officials say overdoses have historically spiked during summer months. Anyone can get a prevention kit. Reach out to your local health department or community health center to find one. Molly Ingram, WSHU News.
A bill that advocates say gives consumers more transparency about what's in their food is making its way through the New York State Legislature. The New York Public News Network's Samuel King reports the proposal passed in the Senate last year, but not in the Assembly.
The bill named the Food Safety and Chemical Disclosure Act would ban three food additives that have been linked to cancer and other health problems in Europe. It would also require makers of packaged goods to disclose more information about additives in their products. Senator Brian Kavanaugh, a Democrat from Manhattan, is supporting the bill.
But we think it will fundamentally change the way some food companies operate because we believe they're putting lots of chemicals in our food without disclosing it. And in fact, they may not want to disclose the presence of some of these chemicals.
But opponents, including several food industry groups, are once again lobbying against the bill. They say it will drive up costs and reduce choice for consumers. Tara Martin is a spokesperson for New Yorkers for Safe and Affordable Groceries, a group backed by the major labels for packaged foods and other consumer goods.
It's going to reduce food access without delivering any real meaningful public health improvements.
Those groups say they support an effort to create national standards around ingredient transparency. In Albany, I'm Samuel King for the New York Public News Network.
Several schools in Connecticut have refused a visit from controversial Trump Education Secretary Linda McMahon in recent months. One school that will welcome her, at least in a sense, is Yale University. WSHU's Davis Donovan reports she's planning a visit for April.
To be clear, it's not the Yale administration, but rather the Buckley Institute, a right-leaning think tank based at Yale. The institute is named for the legendary conservative thinker and Yalie, William F. Buckley, Jr. It's hosted everyone from Boris Johnson to Megyn Kelly to Ben Shapiro. McMahon will speak on April 16th. A few public K-12 schools haven't been so welcoming for McMahon. Schools in Fairfield and Thomaston both canceled appearances that were set to be part of a nationwide tour to mark America's 250th birthday. McMahon is a Connecticut resident, a two-time senatorial candidate, and the former executive of Stanford's World Wrestling Entertainment. Davis Donovan, WSHU News.
Coming up, we're breaking down the main components of digital citizenship with a brand new series that's ahead.
Class Classical music is alive. It's thriving because of contemporary artists responding to our evolving world. I'm classical music host Emily Boyer, and I'll connect you with today's top artists, plus music from the past that speaks to us now. Let art help you make sense of it all. Join me weekday mornings, streaming at WSHU.org and on the WSHU app, and on the radio at 91.1 FM and 107.5 FM.
Submarine manufacturer Electric Boat says it plans to hire about 8,000 new employees this year. The Groton-based company says it's part of a goal to meet the rising demand for fast attack subs. Hearst Connecticut Media reports the company would hire more than 3,000 people in Groton and New London and more than 3,200 at its plant in Rhode Island. The total more than doubles the number of people the company hired last year. The LIRR and its unions have not agreed on a deal, and workers could legally walk off the job in early May. MTA officials say they're preparing buses to get passengers between stations depending on the shutdowns. Long Island Pine Barrens advocate Richard Amper has died at 81. He served for more than three decades as executive director of the Long Island Pine Barrens Society and worked to legally preserve more than 100,000 acres of woodlands. Amper died of a heart condition while in hospice. Students in Stanford are planning walkouts to protest after two principals were transferred to different schools. Stanford's Board of Education said they'll meet to discuss the legality of the moves.
I'm Janice Roman. Welcome to Digital Citizen, a place where we discuss the pillars of digital citizenship and help you feel empowered to engage with the online world. Today, we'll hear from Connecticut State Librarian Deborah Shonder. We'll talk about algorithms, misinformation, how to engage responsibly online, and have more meaningful interactions. What is digital citizenship, and how can we participate in civic engagement online?
Digital citizenship encompasses the relationship that we have to the online environment. It's about how we behave online. It's about how we protect and take care of our personal information and what we share. And it's also about understanding the legal framework that may underpin some of what those activities are as well. In the same way that you would engage with someone else in a face-to-face conversation in a respectful way, you will hopefully do that in your online environment as well. I think there's very much a sense that people's online environment or their online activities are very different than their in-person ones. And I think part of that is because with an anonymous way to engage, it changes how we think about it. We forget that there are people behind the conversations, behind the posts that we are responding to. And I think a lot of that responsibility is understanding that we are still dealing with people on the other side of whatever we are engaging with. And that is definitely one of those responsibilities that we would have to take into account with the privilege that we have.
What should we be mindful of when scrolling online, and how can we be a critical consumer of media?
There are several things that I think we need to be very careful about. You know, one is just the endless scrolling that is now possible. You can sit and open an app and you can just continue to flick your thumb and flick your thumb for hours, and the content never ends. And the longer that you do that, the less the algorithm is showing you the content that you came there for, and the more it is showing you just information that is pulling in order to give you something to see.
How can we build habits that avoid getting drawn into that?
I think, first of all, it's if you can, simply being aware of the fact that it is happening at all. I think many people don't quite realize how much time they are spending online at all. And so once you become aware, there are, ironically, there are technological ways that you can handle some of these situations. There are apps that exist that you can say, I am limiting the amount of time that I am spending on this particular app. And so if you spend more than 5 minutes, a notice will pop up and say, do you want to stay here? And you have to be more conscious in the way that you engage with it. Or there are ways that you can set up your phone so that the screen is grayed out. So it's not even just the fact that something might not be bright and colorful might change the way that you interact with what you're doing. So there are, first, of course, it's just being knowing what is happening. And then there are tools, whether they are digital tools or others, that you can use. So for example, there's also the Pomodoro method that people use for their work. And that is you set a timer and you do it for 25 minutes and then you stop and you go on to another task. So if you don't want to use an app to control your scrolling, for example, you could set a timer on your your oven or however it is that you do that. And you can say, once this alarm goes off, after 10 minutes, after 25 minutes, I'm no longer going to do that and change to it. Or you could have a buddy. That's another really good way to do it, is have a family member or a friend who says, I've noticed you've just been sitting there scrolling for a really long time. Do you want to take a break? And so helping us be more conscious of it and then take affirmative steps to change our behavior really can change the way that we are interacting online.
Those are all really great tips. I'm excited to use that myself. I am familiar with Pomodoro from working. I just never thought to apply it to social media. So that's an excellent tip. Going back to, you mentioned about we want to be informed about the world. So how can we go about navigating that? And specifically, how do we spot misinformation?
That is a really important question because, as you were saying, the more information there is online, the more likely it is that it is inaccurate or it is being fed to you by a particular person or for a particular viewpoint. So there are a couple of things that we can do to start spotting misinformation. Looking at the source of the website, what is the, I was a teacher for many years, and one of the things that I would tell students is look at the URL. Is it coming from a .gov, a .org? What is the source of the information? Who has access to those websites? Who can create the information?
And now for a final piece of advice for those who are listening about navigating the digital world, what is one thing that they can do right now to be a better digital citizen?
I would say, just to start, track how much time you're spending online every day. Where is your time going when you're doing that? Are you there to learn a particular thing? Are you there to accomplish something? Or are you just kind of there to spend some time and waste some time? Not necessarily a bad thing. We all need to waste time. But being simply conscious about how much time you're spending online and then asking yourself, is that how I want to be spending my time? I think that's a really good place to start.
All right. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me. I learned so much.
Well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed the conversation.
To hear the full interview, go to WSHU.org or download the WSHU app. Thanks for listening. I'm Janice Roman.
For the news you trust and music you love, listen on the radio, online at WSHU.org, or download the free WSHU app. And for more on the music you hear, the latest news, and some fun behind the scenes, join us over on Instagram at WSHU Public Radio. I'm Sabrina Garone. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk tomorrow.